For 15 years, 32, in Effingham, my husband and I kept the village shop. We took this shop over in 1932, but it belonged to us for 3 years before that. Effingham then was completely different. It was a small, self-contained village with a small population. We stayed at the Milestones while the shop was being enlarged and altered. We were there for 3 months, and the Milestones, which is now flats, was a baker's shop in those days, with a bakehouse behind and stabling for the horses.
I think there were 3 horses, weren't there?
Yes. Mm. Early in the morning, when the oven was lit, the crickets woke you. Opposite, where the opening to the playing fields is, was a path with a belt of trees.
I think there was a pond.
And a pond, mm. Yes, there was a pond. Mm. And it was a beautiful spot there, really, wasn't it?
Lovely.
With the old Milestone.
Oh, opposite.
Standing there.
Which is still there now.
Is it still there?
I think so.
The playing fields were called the park.
That was before they turned into King George's Field.
Yeah. and had several clumps of beech trees in the summer before haymaking. Totty grass and moon daisies were very much in evidence there.
We used to go across and pick them when we were children.
Yes, we used to go and pick them. Totty grass was a great favourite. Mm. Brown's Lane had beech trees all the way up on the side of the park.
Well, they were destroyed, weren't they, because they had
this disease.
That was
yes.
After the war.
Yes, oh yes, yes. all the way up from what is now the lodge to the Howard School, then part of the lodge, was a long avenue of lime trees across to the bottom of the footpath to the churchyard.
That's a little footpath that goes up
to the Effingham mm-hmm. Church. Down the village, where the Midsurrey Gardens is, was Henry Woods, the blacksmith. You could watch and smell the horses being shod, and we used to watch the anvil being blown up, and it was most interesting there, wasn't it?
Not many. There were only about 2 blacksmiths left around here now.
Well, then they had to go right over to Abingdon now for
Henry Woods is still alive.
I know he is, yes. He works in Leatherhead. Archer Stovall had shoe repair shed behind. It was a small little place, very hot, kept heated with a small stove, and everyone took their shoes there to be mended, and
he made sandals too.
Oh yes, he did. Oh yes,
and did his carving.
And he carved beautiful tables and things, and he did a lot of that chip carving. Mm. The old post office just above his place was used. It was a very tiny office. Only 2 people could get in.
It had like a little tiny cubbyhole that
that's
you looked
right,
through.
You just went in and
in the corridor.
There was all that beautiful piece of carving on the wood there, wasn't there? I don't know whether that's still there, but it was very, very notable. Noted.
This is where Strauss lived.
Now, yes, that's right.
With the Pilgrim Trust
plaque on the wall. Yes. Mrs. Butcher, the postmistress, wearing a black dress with a white high collar and a brooch at the neck. There were lovely, inside was a lovely open fireplace in the office.
Great big fire in the winter.
Yes,
it was
used
very
to be,
hot.
Yeah. Used to be lovely to go in there, really. Mm. Mr. Butcher was a general builder. He also did burials. The coffins were taken to church on a hand cart. Poor old Mr. Butcher, he had some very decided notions about things and used to stick his feet down very hard on the church council.
Yes.
Mrs. Essam has already taped before her recent death. She was the official layer out. Next to the Hague were two cottages now destroyed, one occupied by Miss Marchant. She was wearing a lovely bun, didn't she?
Yes, marvellous.
Back of her head.
Yes, she was most
very picturesque.
Yes. Very forbidding. Mm.
Mm. The church, as much as it is now, except the chapel, which was still a receptacle for rubbish and unfurnished. It was lit by oil lamps, and the organ was blown by hand. It was most amusing to sit in church and see the old blower.
Yes, it used to make a noise before the hymn started. It used to start pumping the air.
That's right. By the last church cottages was a shed where a hairdresser for men and women was held on Saturday afternoons only,
I can't remember.
We used to go there and...
She was a very good hairdresser.
Miss Campbell was the hairdresser.
And she married the AA man.
She married the AA man, yes, that's right. At the end of Oriston Lane, in the woods, was the estate lodge, one of the Dench families lived there. This has now disappeared altogether.
It's a pity because it was one of these lovely lodges made of flint and brick.
Yes, it was. Mm. It belonged to the Horsley estate, of course, didn't it? Also, in Oriston Lane, there was West Lane Farm, owned by the Killicks, now gone. It was a typical old farmhouse, and you could get milk and thick, fresh cream delivered by horse and cart daily. It was an old Westmore cottage, and that next one to it, what's the name of that, where Mrs. Leach lives, were very tumble-down places then, weren't they?
Yes, they were ramshackle.
Old Westmore, wasn't it? It was in a fairly good condition. Belonged to a major... I've forgotten what his name is, but that old Westmore cottage was quite lettable.
Yes.
The cottage opposite the Plough, where Mrs. Handley lives, were separate cottages.
There were three, yes.
Facing into the Plough forecourt was a row of attractive cottages pulled down when the police house was built.
They had little gardens in front.
And they were very low. When you went in, you nearly knocked your head on the roof.
I think they were just one story.
I think there was a roof.
Low because I remember the doorways being almost at eye level.
Yes, they were very low and very dark. Still, they a fair was held in the field at the corner of Oriston Lane and Common Road.
I don't think that was a yearly thing.
It was just one of these travelling fairs. Mm. It used to cause great excitement.
Yes, everybody went out there. There was a roundabout and all sorts of things.
Oh, yes, and everything that a fair should be. There were two tollgate cottages, one on the Guildford Road, the Effingham side of Durham Lane, the other opposite Rowntree Cottages on the Common Road.
And they've both gone now.
They've both gone, yes. By Willow Pool was a pond with magnificent frog spawn.
Yes, I remember that.
All the children used to go there.
Yes. Jam jars full of frog spawn.
Yes, Paddy Whale used to love going down there, didn't she?
They never turned into frogs there, unfortunately.
Madge's had a butcher shop almost at the same place as Gibbs now, only on the line of the road and approached from the side lane, open on Saturday morning only. There were no houses between that and the village store, our shop, except, Mrs. Edsel's wasn't there in the early days.
That was built for Miss Parker.
The vicar's daughter, yes. Along Lower Road, where the Roman Catholic Church car park is, was a very old cottage set amongst old fruit trees, now pulled down.
It had a lovely big
garden. Oh, it was beautiful, that.
It afraid it got tumble down and derelict.
People lived there. Miss Datt lived there for a time, didn't she? And Mr. and Mrs. and Miss Datt. The house was all right, but I suppose the Roman Catholics wanted it for their
space.
Enlargement. In the yard between the garage and Beach, the back of the garage and Beach Avenue, were stables for horses. Originally a riding school, was behind the old W.I. Hall, opposite to Cubitt and West. The stables bought horses for royalty abroad. They used to go especially to Denmark, I think. And each day they used to run a coach through the village past the station to the Hoboy in the summer with Postillion blowing the post horns.
It was marvellous, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. It was fun, wasn't
loaded
it?
With people,
yes. The stables were burnt down just before the war during one night, and the clock tower on the top heard crashing through the roof.
Yes, I don't remember. I think I slept through it, but it was a...
I remember waking up and seeing the light there and wondering what was happening, and we decided not to go up there because there was only a crowd. Talking of her horses, Derby Week gypsies travelled through some time before.
Yes, it took them so they used to travel from place to place up to the motorised.
About a week before they used to come in by their provisions.
Travelling on the road.
Yes, on their way.
Yeah.
And Derby Day... sitting on the wall opposite the White House to watch the traffic going past.
And the children.
The children calling out, throw out your mouldy coppers. It was
people did too.
Oh, they did, yes. They picked up quite a bit there. It was quite a day. They had
everyone had to go and see the traffic.
The traffic was past. The AA man was here until the lights were put in just before the war, and the 408 double-deck bus turned at the crossroads to return to Leatherhead. Single-deck buses for Guildford and Leatherhead waited outside The Hague to start journeys.
Yes, they had separate buses. One came from Leatherhead to
stopped here,
to Effingham,
yes,
and then the other
right.
one started Effingham to go on to Guildford.
A village taxi was run by Mr. West in the mid-30s. He lived at Yew Tree House, which was pulled down to make Yew Tree Walk. Of course, in the meantime, it was one of the army headquarters, wasn't it?
I remember going to the station one Christmas Eve, and the road was very narrow then. It was before it was widened, and it was a very snowy one, very snowy Christmas Eve, and the snow was hard in the car on both sides of the road, and there was only just enough room for one vehicle to go through. I don't know what happened if you met anything coming the other way.
I've done to anything came.
it sort of shut
itself out. Then do you remember the muffin man who came weekly carrying muffins on the tray on his head, covered with a white cloth?
I think he came out of Epsom.
Came from Epsom, yes he did.
I don't know how he managed to carry enough muffins.
He came back again after the war too.
I can remember his face quite clearly.
So could I.
And the rag and bone man we had.
Yes, the rag and bone man used to always come and buy a little piece of cheese and biscuits until the rationing came, and that put the end of that. In Madge's field, behind Curtis's and Oriston Lane, magnificent mushrooms were there in these September mornings. If you got up early enough.
It just had to be daybreak to feed the other people to it.
Getting out, and also the walnut trees from the trees opposite Rose Cottage came down on windy nights. We used to get up early to get those, didn't we, before other people came along.
Well, the traffic came along and crushed them.
When we went to the village stores, the staircase was in the cupboard from the living room.
Like Miss O'Connor's.
Yes,
house,
that's right.
Church
yeah.
Cottage, isn't
yes. The bakehouse oven and the chimney all came down when we had the premises altered, and it took an awful long time to pull that bakehouse oven to pieces. It was bound together with bands of iron. I think it took nearly a fortnight to pick it to pieces. In those days, Mr. Diamantidi lived at Grove House, and members of the Russian Ballet visited him and came into the shop. Two actresses, Gwen Farrer and Nora Blaney, lived at the paddock, now Mrs. Wright's house.
Because they were characters, they were.
They were.
Most eccentric.
They used to dress up and walk up the village in all sorts of peculiar things.
For those days, anyway.
Yes, they made us all wake up, didn't they? then there were the old village characters. There was old Scan, do you remember him? Who lived behind Mizzens in the caravan.
That was somewhere over in the woods.
He lived behind Water Lane there. Mm. And he was a real character. He used to, I suppose, do odd jobs in the farms. But I don't even think he had a caravan. I think he had a sort of bivvy out there. He used to come in for his rations.
And
he loved his bit of pipe. And there was also the son of a very keen WI member, Mrs. Dench, George. He was retarded, and they used to stand in front of their cottage in Victory Cottages, saluting every car. And he really was well known for miles round. People would say, "Oh, Effingham, that's where that funny boy is, isn't it? Who sends the traffic along."
Yes, he died when he was quite young.
About 35, I think he was. He was a very nice young man.
He was.
Very kindly. At the one time, the vicar of Effingham was Mr. Flood, and the little Bookham rector was Mr. Drinkwater. And Dr. Waterfield was the local GP.
That used to cause great amusement.
It did. Dr. Waterfield was a great support. WI was very go ahead. We had a folk dance club, but Mrs. Poland was the leading member.
She always lost her way.
She took the wrong turning, but we got along. We won several certificates.
Everybody had the material for the dresses made of the same material.
Yes, that's right. And Miss Madge, the butcher's sister, played the piano. She'd sit there for the hour playing these wretched dances things.
It was great fun.
Oh, we had great fun. Had a lot of fun. And then we had concerts by the village people and the schools in Miss Parker, the late vicar's daughter, produced several Shakespeare plays, and the children really were very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Very good indeed. The year before the war, the WI president, Mrs. Farrer, she was president at the time, and her husband, Ajax, of the BBC Children's Hour, organised a concert, including Richard Murdoch and Ida Handel, violinist. It was to have been a yearly affair, but of course the war came and that put the end to that. Then there were the Silver Jubilee celebrations for King George V. Do you remember what a very hot day that was? Baking hot. Everyone was so thirsty.
I don't know what happened in London that day, but they must have been
nearly dead. We had a fancy dress parade around the village with a village band led by Mr. Stuart Adams as the drum major with a walking stick. Mr. Street, Mr. Pole, Mr. Patton and Mr. Stovall in the band paraded, finishing in Madge's Field. Then they had a comic football match and sports, etc. And everyone was so thirsty they get drink gallons of lemonade.
I think it ran out, the lemonade.
In the end, yes, we
it was
the shop.
Enough.
And there wasn't any. And then, of course, outside the school, a tree was planted by Stuart Adams. The coronation of King George VI was not so involved, just a tea party for the village children.
Everybody was given a mug. This is the only other thing I can remember.
They had a mug, so they did. I've forgotten that.
Yes, there was a mug for the Silver Jubilee and a mug, mug for that coronation, just like there was a mug for the present Queen's coronation for everybody.
Yes, I suppose it was.
I kept mine for a long while.
Then, before the war, it was declared, there was a meeting of shopkeepers who had to say how long customers could be fed. Mr. Stuart Adams was appointed food officer, and we had instructions that nothing was to be sold without his written consent. Miss Young, the matron of the lodge, was appointed the village midwife in case we were cut off here. The vicar and the Roman Catholic priest were to be notified of deaths, our shop had permits for the Home Guard food, and we were all really prepared in case we were cut off.
Well, how long that was before the war?
About a month, I should think. It was all well organised, and Stuart Adams had got everything well in hand, you know. At the declaration of war, the church house of Bookham was the first aid post. The village women went to help. Mrs. Brown of High Barn was a commandant. The air raid siren was opposite church house in Bookham. We had no siren in the village, so if the wind was in the wrong direction, no warnings were heard.
You'd hear the all clear and say, there must have been a war.
We felt safe then. Mrs. Mooney was the billeting officer for evacuee children. She used to go around battering people to take children. I think they got rather tired of her eventually. The Sunday war was declared. Two coachloads of children from Fulham and expectant mothers came. They were sent to various homes. Some were not prepared with food, and we kept busy supplying them with all their needs. Many women went back. They couldn't stand the quiet of the country. But many children stayed all through the war. Later, the Strand School boys from Dulwich came and took over Brown's as school.
And that was when the Hughes had it to his nurse.
That's right. That was a good time before they came, because, you see, after the boys left, it was turned into flats for a time, if you remember, solicitor from Epsom then took it over, before Hughes Hallett's came. In 1940, the Howard of Effingham School opened.
Yes, they started building it before the war.
It was started before, yes, and then they finished it, and it was opened and used part the day by the local and part by the evacuee children. The primary school from Fulham shared St Lawrence Primary. Their headmistress was a very nice woman, if you remember. Miss Harrison, wasn't it?
She was very sweet.
She was very nice, and she was so kind to those children. Miss Ross at the Hollies had three girls and a nurse from the Putney Home for Incurables. Well, then, of course, the Canadian troops arrived. Barricades were erected at the garage and Beach Avenue.
Mays Garage,
yes. And we had her permits to deliver the food up there. These Canadians were tough, reputedly ex-convicts included. And in the night to hear revolver shots. And Saturday afternoon, it was quite an occasion when they used to fetch them up from the pub, you remember, in a relief lorry. The White House tea rooms were frequented by troops. Later on in the war, the canteen... Well, all the war, we started the night the troops came into the village to run a canteen at the Women's Institute. This was run by the WVS, and Mrs. West of Cubitt and West was in charge, but because they completely took over the WI Hall.
Yes, the lot.
I remember we used to cut the bread at the shop on our machine. And how cross they were one night when it was late getting there. Mrs. Fraser, then secretary, and many WI members took turns to help. Opened each evening, and the day before D-Day, when the troops were combined at barracks, open all day, and the officer came and asked us if we would keep it open all day.
So they were allowed to go to the canteen.
They were allowed to go to the canteen, but they weren't allowed to go out of the village, so that it was on all day on that day, open all day long. On the first air raid, old Mr. Tyrrell, our air raid warden, came cycling up the village in his tin hat in the early morning, calling out, "They're over, take cover." That was to everybody's amusement. No sound until the all clear. When the Canadians came, the lorries parked up Beach Avenue under the hedges and on Guildford Road and all the way down Manor House Lane.
They were literally nose to tail.
They were everywhere.
This was fun.
The old stables were workshops and the cookhouse at the golf club inside the main gate.
It's in some one of the, I'm not sure which outbuildings.
Wasn't there a tent there or something?
I'm not quite sure what it was.
I know they had the mess up there.
The
officer's mess was at Colonel Cubitt's house in High Barn, and the company office in Yew Tree House, also South Lodge, and the cottage were taken over. And then that butcher's shop was turned into a guest chamber, wasn't
so it?
It
was.
Do you remember that?
Yes, imagine the butchers.
Imagine the butchers, it was turned into a guest training, yes. Mm. During the Dunkirk evacuation time, we could stand at the bottom of the garden and hear continuous sounds of trains going through from Guildford up to London, and the WS went from, some of the women went from the village to give the troops refreshments on Guildford Station.
Troops, they used to stay in the trains and they used to have...
They used to feed them through the window, yes.
They rumbled through night and day.
Constant sound of traffic.
I can't
traffic.
Remember how long it went
well,
on
Well, you see, the weather was so beautiful.
Clear.
We could hear everything from Guildford as though it was quite near.
And there wasn't the traffic in the village.
No, of course there wasn't. Everything was quiet and we just felt as though we were near it.
And you could hear the guns from across the channel.
Oh yes, yes. And it was very funny. Do you remember the time when a chauffeur came into the shop and asked Daddy the way to a certain village and he refused to tell him?
No, I don't remember this.
He said he wouldn't tell him, and he didn't tell him. He said we weren't supposed to. He didn't know who this man was, so he wouldn't give him any directions.
Might have been a foreigner.
He thought it was, but this man was so cross because he wouldn't tell him which way to go. He said, "Well, surely you know," but he
because
wouldn't tell him.
The signposts have been taken down anyway.
Signposts were all removed, and if you hadn't any idea where the places were, well, you just
hadn't. How did you get them?
During the Battle of Britain, of course, was lovely weather like it is this year,
beautiful.
Wasn't it? Beautiful yeah, weather,
lovely sky,
lovely days we had, and we could stand and watch these battles going over over our head.
Yes, you could actually see the planes
yes,
being shot.
Yes, yes, we could. Down. And I remember the day that one was brought down at Horsley. Mm. We saw that quite well. Altogether, two companies, Canadians, and three RAS companies were in the village. And, to go back to the Battle of Britain. We shall come to that presently, don't we? the village... A busy guard. Guard changing the traffic, etc.
Very busy. It suddenly came to life, the village, then, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes. We had concerts and in the Howard of Effingham
and dances.
Mm-hmm. And the villagers were invited to them if they cared to go.
They were very good. They were very good concerts.
They were good concerts, yes, they were.
And anybody in the companies, in the soldiers, amongst the soldiers who could entertain.
Mm. Oh, yes.
There were several of them.
There were. I've forgotten all that.
There's one very good violinist who came from the London Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yes, we had some very good people amongst them at times. then, of course, the flying bombs came. The Institute hall roof was damaged by a bomb which dropped at Orchard Walls.
Mrs. West was living there.
Cubitt West lived there. And then the another bomb destroyed a house next door to Windy Ridge on the Common Road, where a man was killed. The house was later rebuilt. The shop, our shop ceilings came down. Cans of food thrown off the shelves.
They were blowing all over the place, weren't
yes.
they?
Yes, oh yes, it was a real muddle, and people came in there to shelter and get away from...
They were running and rushing into the hall.
They just walk in, and then we'd provide cups of tea afterwards before they went home. One night, incendiary bombs dropped in the village and lit up one... And one, we had a stick of them in a tree at the shop. The curtains at the Hague were set alight, and during that evening the village was alive with people putting them out. And we also had foil dropped by enemy planes to mislead our radar.
Yes, we found that in the garden, by
yes,
the way,
we did,
didn't we?
Yes, we did, yes.
Oh,
Now then, you go on with that.
Yes, I remember this bit because this is me.
Yeah.
So I was up at the convent one day and the cloud was very low.
Mm.
And I just happened to be standing outside the lodge back door.
Yeah.
And I heard a plane coming out of the clouds. And suddenly, to my horror, I started being machine gunned. They were machine gunning the convent. This was a Dornier that came out. It came down very, very low.
Mm.
I rushed for cover, I must say.
Yes, it was. Well, I remember you coming back full of it.
Yes, it was a bit terrifying.
It was, certainly.
It was very low. It suddenly appeared out of the mist. You were in the shop one day.
I was in one Wednesday. The shop. I looked out through the shop window and there were a soldier and a woman crouching under the hedge just opposite, and there was an aeroplane machine gunning them.
You can't remember, you can't believe that this actually happened, can you, when you look back?
No, you can't. It seems impossible, doesn't it?
Plenty of flying bombs going over, but none of them...
Lots of flying bombs, and I think those were the only two really serious incidents we had. But I remember the WVS coming over from... the first aid people coming over from Bookham and being all busy about it. Of course, the one up at the Institute, I went up to see what had happened up there when it was all over. And we had to see to that being repaired. And
there's also one night while you were away, I don't know where you've gone to, but we were opened by this tremendous rumbling, and it went on and on. It gradually got noisier and noisier, and it was a whole lot of tanks, these gigantic tanks. They'd come over Ranmore, down Beach Avenue, and they were going down the village street. And in the morning, when we went out, these tanks were so big and vast that they damaged the curbstones because there just wasn't room for them to go down the street.
Mm.
I don't know where they were going to.
And all this time we were dealing with food coupons and points, and occasionally the old adjunct would come from the Home Guard and say... Now, if we're called up tomorrow, what can I have? I've got so many points, and I would be going through telling him what he could have, and we'd be about an hour sorting out what food he could have if he was called up on the next day. And this is how life went on. We had no free time.
We kept the ration books, didn't we? We used to count the coupons up, and I think they had to be counted up in hundreds and sent in separate little packets down to the food office.
Counted and... Once a fortnight we had to give our stocks so that they knew what stocks of ration food we got in hand. We were supposed to keep a fortnight's ration in hand all the time in case we got cut off. Made life very hard, but still it went on. Later on in the war, the WI people... prepared lunches for Neil and Spencer. They were an engineering firm which took over the garage.
They're now Leatherhead.
And we used to get their lunches ready for them in the hall. And then after that, of course, the government gave us permit for sausage rolls and jam tarts and
meat pies.
Yes, that's right. Once a week they used to come, and queues of people used to come from all over the village.
They were quite good.
Oh yes, they were very good, and we were always busy doing something up at the WI. But then that's how the war went on, and people were so much more friendly in those days. People used to say, oh, well, I should be going down to the station with my husband tomorrow morning. If you get the goods ready for my neighbours, I'll take them up.
And they
used to do the delivering just like that. I don't know what we should have done without them sometimes. They were so kind.
Yes, once our van driver was ill.
Yes.
And all the customers turned knuckle too, and anybody who had any petrol came along. And did some deliveries for us.
Yes. On one occasion, everybody was ill, and the army sent a man to drive.
Oh, they did, yes. Yes. Yes, I remember going out with him, yes.
Yes, as long as someone could go who knew where the houses were.
Yes,
they let the driver come, and he did the delivering for us.
Yes, I've forgotten that. Mm.
Oh, yes, they were very good like that.
Terrific. Cooperation between the army and the village people.
The village people were all much more friendly in those days.
Everybody knew everyone,
and what one hadn't got, the other one would find for them. It was quite a friendly little village. And one of the soldiers said to me once, well, we've been in all sorts of villages, but we've never been in such a friendly one as this is. Everybody says good morning to you. Which, of course, they did.
Well, they did, because everybody knew each other.
Yes. Well, I remember how before they were going away, the number of people who left their money with me and bicycles and all sorts of things to be sent on to their wives after they'd gone, it kept us really busy. When the occupation of the village ended after D-Day, when the last soldiers left for France during the middle of the night, and next day all was quiet and empty, and we started on our own way again, back into the old rut.
The quiet.